Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, he's from California. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White, or Star-Lord, or Mobius M. Mobius? I don't know. I'm also a senior reporter producer for Decider.com, and say hello to the Hawkeye to my radar, or Hawkeye to my Black Widow. Let's just keep the theme going. Ethan K. Hello, Ethan.
Hello, Brett. And if you're wondering why Brett is muffled on your at-home listening, podcast listening, he is getting into the Halloween season by wearing an official Star-Lord replica mask, a la Marvel.
Uh-huh. Because I went to Target and it was 50% off, because ain't no one works a ton of them. so I got it for like $40. No, I think it might have still been like 70. Whatever.
The third movie was not great. It was good.
The third movie was fucking amazing.
It was not great. It was...
No, it was fucking... It's maybe the
second
best one.
Second one was better. Second one was much better.
They're all three great. It's a perfect trilogy. I cry too much. And now I'm being emotional in a fucking Star-Lord mask.
Take the Star-Lord mask off. You come...
Jesus. Oh, wait. Hold on. I have to get the little...
Okay. God. Okay. Oh, wow.
That does a number on your hair.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, in the movies, it's just a little thing behind his. Oddly enough, he doesn't wear this in the third one, even though he really could have used it.
When he left and went out into space.
Which, you know, okay, I will worry about closing it up later.
Welcome to Must Have Seen TV. I'm your co-host, Ethan K.
And you're not wearing a silly mask. No. Ooh, yeah. And I'm also wearing my official Loki TVA. The jacket is season one. The shirt is season two. I just got it in the mail the other day. Thank you, Disney Plus, for sending me things.
Thanks, Disney. I'm really hoping that I can log in at the right time tomorrow and book another trip down to see you guys in Florida.
And we also totally would take sponsorship. whatever you want to pay. No. But yeah, it is Halloween, the month of Halloween. I am trying to slay the demon of depression and actually get excited about Halloween, which ain't happening yet.
Halloween's a great month. October is also Halloween, which is a great month. We finally, since we moved up to Westchester, we get trick-or-treaters now, which we weren't getting in Queens. We had about 30 to 40 last year. Because we give out the big candy bars, the full-size candy bars, and we have a big bucket full of loose, small, fun-size candy. So everyone
Lucy's.
Gets to think, you get Lucy's. you get a big candy bar, and then you get to dunk your hand into the big bucket. And kids love that. They talk okay. about it. So far, we haven't been targeted for any kind of retribution for telling them to get off our yard. So
well, they need to know we got to be good, because in a couple months it's big candy bar time.
Yeah,
I wish I want that. I want that life.
We do have a back. Life.
We have a back patio now that we're so. I'm like, if I can rally my energy, I would like to actually. I would love to do like the Tim the Toolman Taylor level haunted house insanity back there. for our, like, now that I'm an honorary gunkle to Ben's kid. So I'm like, I want to scare this almost 3-year-old. But
now,
whatever.
Can you get to your backyard from anywhere besides your apartment? Is there like an outside facing door?
No. I mean, like the window right here, but I don't think I can open it wide enough. I could grab.
But I was going to say that if you have that space and you want kids and neighborhood kids to walk through it, that means they have to walk through your apartment.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not doing anything for the neighborhood kids. I always thought that was very weird on the sitcoms, where it's just like all the neighborhood kids would come through and it's like, okay, whatever, which we'll get to in a second, because that is so there's a lot of housekeeping. First of all, as always, oh, please leave comments. We don't have any YouTube. Okay, no, yeah, we don't have any YouTube comments. But yeah, leave comments, email musthaveseentv@gmail.com, leave reviews on iTunes, etc., especially now that we're giving you more content,
extra content you can only find here because we're the only ones making it.
Yeah, this is what I did on Saturday. I realized like all of our videos are hour long discussions, and I was like, oh, you know, people probably want 1 minute to 2 minute long clips. Like that's what you share with people. That's what you say, like, oh, I thought this was funny. I thought, you know, this was a funny point, or here's an easily removable chunk of an episode. Like, so I'm trying to put up more clips, starting with our must have now TV conversations from episodes where I am in drag, since that's visually interesting, and also only recent ones where I'm in drag and I'm not ashamed of how I look.
You've passed your fuck around era. Now you've figured it out era.
People have found out. I found out. No, I mean, I my makeup, now that I realize that I am a blonde, et cetera, like things are a lot better in that. But to give myself a clip to edit out and put up on its own in like a week, what are you watching right now?
Brett, I am very thrilled that Our Flag Means Death has come back.
Oh, yeah. God,
that's
yes.
That's on Max.
Watch the first one episode.
They have
of season two.
They dropped three episodes at once on Max last week. And I don't know if they're doing one episode per week or multiples. It's only an 8-episode season.
I mean, we were lucky to get it because I feel like they squeezed it in right before David Zaslav took over and was like, well, we don't actually want to make things here.
Yeah, we want to purchase content.
I'm sorry, does Our Flag Means Death star an obese person with pimples to pop? No? Are they not doing an arranged via the internet marriage? No, I don't want it. God.
You put the worst person in charge of Warner Brothers. Thank you. Great job.
Yeah.
No notes. Excellent.
No, it's a very good show. Great ensemble cast.
Great writing.
I love the Gentleman Pirate. I relate.
We all want to keep seeing more of it, and anything can happen in the next 5 episodes. That's the great thing about this show. So that was an enjoyable one. Brett, what have you been watching?
Well, I'm not going to say Loki, even though I am wearing, this is my Halloween costume this episode.
I guess. Can say Loki if you're watching.
Well, no, I mean, I'm more watching Survivor for the first time. And I am, I think, oh my God, am I like on my 5th season of watching? Because Survivor 45 is airing right now, which I am watching. This is my first time watching one week to week. And oh man, it's a good one so far, because maybe the worst tribe in Survivor history is Lulu, and they are amazing. Week one, someone just flat out is like, I don't want to be here, and leaves. and then like week two, it's like, oh, the dude, I mean, I guess spoilers for episode 2 of the season of Survivor, but like the guy who on the very first physical challenge, like the go out there and like get a thing that you like just need to camp or whatever, like passes out, like just full on, like me, like if I was tasked with doing any of this, just full on passes out and like almost like medical has to come. He's gone. And then like one of the only people that the other person that's still on the team is a full on aggressive nightmare person who is just picking so many fights, but also like knows that she's unbearable and that everyone hates her. It's great. Oh. It's good.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad you're having a good time with it.
But in terms of back episodes, I was like, I decided to start at the halfway point. So I started with season 20, 22 or 23.
That's a lot of seasons.
Yeah, because they're on 45. They do two a year. And so I
where
think
they feel, like where do they still have to film now? Like Paris?
Oh, no, apparently they do multiples. Like, apparently I'm on my third season in a row that was shot in the Philippines. They just like move to different parts of the Philippines. But it is a fascinating show, and the man, twists and turns. You know, like my annual Christmas Dirty Santa game.
Yeah, full of twists.
It's basically that. It is basically it scratches the same itch.
You're a plagiarist for a show that's been on for 45 seasons.
No, but like it makes sense. That's good.
Can we talk about MASH? Because MASH is interesting.
Well, in a second, because
you're interesting too, but like,
no, Jesus Christ, no, because we're getting into Halloween, and before we journey to Halloween 1982 with MASH, I wanted to talk about Halloween 1982 because I dug into the newspaper archives and found out what was going on this Halloween season, and it is actually interesting. Ooh, so Halloween 1982, I initially started my search for I'll just say this: the Chicago Tylenol murders happened like early October is when Tylenol was like, okay, we're calling them all back. So that's like 3 weeks before this episode, so that is very much top of mind. Oh, do you know more about the Chicago Tylenol murders?
I mean, it was they never found out who it was.
But did it was they? Like someone was just like with a syringe, like was like putting poison in Tylenol, like random Tylenol bottles. Yeah. Do not get any ideas, anyone. All the hardcore. We have a big prison population listening to us, which is why they don't email or leave.
I'm supposed to have a surgery on my finger next week, and I'm not allowed to take any Advil or ibuprofen or Aleve or Tylenol for 2 weeks beforehand. So anytime I get a headache or the thing that I need to get surgery for hurts, I can't take anything for it. Granted, I would not take the poison Tylenol if I knew it was poison Tylenol.
Yeah.
I just, I'm glad that Tylenol was available then. And I really wish I miss it. I miss it.
Oh man. But yeah. So this happens in like September, October, 1982. So Halloween comes. And now, so I started my night by searching for Halloween trick or treat parents danger candy. That's what I searched archives for. So the 1981, the previous year, the newspaper results I got back was just 61 matches. But when you search for 1982, in the height of the Tylenol murder scare, 313 matches. Ooh. So like this, I mean, like the urban legends of like razor blades and apples and apparently straight pins in candy bars and stuff. Yep. That's like we heard that growing up in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s and stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
But it feels like this is where like it really, the Tylenol murders make it blow up now. In 1982, this Texas newspaper posted a big like op-ed about, you know, with the parents, rules for parents. But first of all, they do say it's a Texas newspaper, and they say There have been danger signals in Longview, Texas in recent years. No suspects ever were arrested in an incident in West Longview where a mother had just brought her small child home from an evening of trick-or-treating and was careful to check all the goodies before allowing the child to put anything in her mouth. The mother found a bite-sized candy bar with a straight pin stuck through it. Now, that story, they noticed how they said, like, oh, it happened in this town.
Yeah.
No, if you go back to 1981, which I did, I found another article from Illinois, 740 miles north, that was like, last year in our town, Arlene so-and-so, the daughter found a straight pin in the that was a Halloween 1980. And then they wrote an op-ed about an 81, and then in 82, all of a sudden it's Texas. So like,
so yeah,
friend of a friend. I don't know. So here are some of the rules. Children should be accompanied by parents at all time while trick-or-treating. Wait, so tell me, did these rules apply to you? Wait, did you trick-or-treat?
I trick-or-treated. I trick-or-treated until probably junior high.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, did you have friends?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't have friends. So I stopped in sixth grade.
We kind of did the, I don't want to say it was like a pity walk, but there was a really long road with not a lot of houses on it. So we would do that just early on. So all those people could give the candy and all that wanted to see the costumes. But then we would get in someone's car, not our car, because we were not driving. And we go down to a much more densely residential development. And that's where, you know, house after house after house, you didn't have to walk that far. We would do both of them after a pretty early age. I want to say probably about around fifth grade, we'd double dip like that.
So like all of these rules are very common sense. I don't know. Children should be accompanied by parents. Yeah. Trick or treat in neighborhoods where you know the people.
We didn't do that.
Oh,
we did the first time we knew the people going up and down our own streets. We knew those people, but going into like, I forget the name of the, it was by the school, but there were just a lot of developments that had just sprung up in the mid 80s. And we didn't know any of the people there unless their kids went to school with us, which,
danger. And
we wouldn't know because those kids were out trick or treating too.
Accept only candy that is individually wrapped. Take a pile of loose M&Ms. the parent should inspect the candy as soon as it is passed out. That ain't happening. If the candy appears to have been tampered with, the parent should throw it away. Or something dangerous like a pin is found in it in the candy, police should be called.
You're not going to... the candy police, is that what it said?
Yeah, it's just like the candy police is walking around. They're over from Candyland. and there's like children's costumes should be reflective, which is annoying because it's like, is that screen accurate? Probably not.
No.
And that's more important. Do not accept homemade candy or like fresh fruit. Start trick-or-treating at an early hour.
Yeah, I do remember getting popcorn balls from the old woman down the street.
Oh, an old woman who didn't understand the time that she was living in.
I was alive in 1982. I might not have been walking up and down the street because I was 2 years old, but I was alive in 1982.
You remember the nightmare. Children should go in groups. Watch out for passing vehicles. Do not allow children to run across streets from one house to another. And then they're like, watch for fire hazards, such as pumpkins or lanterns with live flames inside. Don't get clothing or costume. It's just like, here's just general stuff to worry about.
Don't leave the tub on while you're trick-or-treating.
Heads don't belong in ovens. No.
When you leave, blow out your incense.
So the other little op-ed that I found was in the Chicago Tribune. And this is the last one, but man, and I'm not going to read it, but it's a... So Bob Green, a Chicago Tribune columnist, basically like, if you are a parent and you have any sense, you will forbid your child from going out trick-or-treating this Halloween because of the Tylenol killer.
And all the kids wanted Tylenol that year.
They're like,
can't have your Tylenol this year, little Johnny.
Well, it's like Hershey Kisses and Tylenol. Like, that's the thing that people want to... And then I
asked for Tylenol, and they're like, no, just Snickers. And they're like, I'm like, okay. And then I put a little X on their door so that other kids would know they don't have Tylenol to give out.
So he says, like, a number of parents have called this office with suggestions about what children might do in place of trick-or-treating. All of those parents wanted to make the night an upbeat occasion for their kids. One mother said that boys and girls should be taken to see E.T. on Halloween night, perhaps starting a new tradition. So, yeah, this is what Mr. Bob Green wanting people to, like, just think of the children. Now, what was he thinking of the children in 1988, 6 years later, when a 17-year-old high school senior recently graduated came by to do her last, like, project from school on Mr. Bob Green? And then what did he think when he took her out for dinner and then back to a motel where they did everything except for, like, what was it called? Unconsummated something. Yeah. So, yeah, 39, he had a tryst with a 17-year-old, and that is why he was fired.
Oh my from God.
His Chicago Tribune job. Man, and I like, that's a fun little thing I just stumbled across.
Wow. You did your research. I just looked up MASH.
Well, and I also looked up, like, UFO sightings of Bigfoot. Oh, the governor of one state wanted to be Bigfoot for Halloween Halloween 1982. Well, he said, like, trick-or-treating ain't for just kids. I want to be Bigfoot. Like, why did that make the paper?
That could be two separate thoughts. It's like, it's not just for kids. Oh, I wish I was actually Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Episode did not air on Halloween night. It aired the next night on November 1st.
And this week we will be traveling to November 1st, 1982. First Blood ruled the box office, which is Rambo. And Up Where We Belong by Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warrens topped the charts, and CBS aired the MASH episode Trick or Treatment. Ethan, you must have seen Trick or Treatment before today.
No, this is another sitcom that I was too young for. And I've never watched an entire episode. I've turned it on here and there, but never stuck with it. So November 1st, 1982, though, I was looking up things that happened then. And this was the day that the first Asian car manufacturer opened its doors in the United States. It was Honda.
Wow.
And they rolled out a Honda Accord on the first day.
My first car was a Toyota Camry, but I totaled it. I totaled it while dressed as Nightcrawler when I was a senior in high school. And man, didn't teleport out in time. Anyway.
No BAMF.
And then I got a Honda Accord, and I had that for a long time.
So when I did look this up, The notable things that happened this day are the Honda factory opened and George Wendt and Andrew Dice Clay guest star on Trick or Treating. And there is no show called Trick or Treating. It's this MASH episode called Trick or Treating. So I've found it in at least two different internet news sites repeating the same thing.
It's MASH.
Omitting the fact that it's MASH.
The biggest sitcom of the 1980s it was The Cosby Show, which I'm not touching until I figure out some way to touch it. If I ever want to touch it, I don't want to touch it. And then I think it was Family Ties, right? But there is no Halloween episode of Family Ties. So we're doing MASH because MASH, this is 1982. By spring 1983, MASH is done for the 80s. This is its last season.
But 1982 saw the 11th and final season of MASH. Alan Alda did not want to do it after season 9, but they got him on for season 10, a short version of season 11 because the set burned down.
Whoa.
And then they wrapped it up with a TV movie called Goodbye, Amen, and Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, which is a 2-hour long movie written by Alan Alda, which was and is still to this day the highest rated the most watched sitcom episode in history.
That's a joke. It's a joke, I think, on Friends about, like, you got the VHS tape that was half the hostages come home, half the finale of MASH, which is a joke that if you were born in the year 2000, you're just not going to understand any of that.
No, none of those words. Yeah. But it was a very popular sitcom. It lasted 11 seasons.
Well, and then it went on to Trapper John MD was going on.
Well, it went to After MASH.
And After MASH.
A lot of the same cast. And then Alan Alda went on to bigger and better, not bigger or better things, but he continues to do amazing work, both as a director, a writer, and an actor.
Just in everything, all around dude.
So 11 seasons, it was created by Larry Gelbart, who was famous as a writer for Sid Caesar, along with that whole group, Mel Brooks, Mel Tolkien, Neil Simon, that whole group. He wrote Tootsie, and he wrote Oh God, the movie, and the play A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which my high school did that my senior year.
And then MASH was a movie.
It started out as a movie. It started out as a book, and then Robert Altman made the movie based on the book, and that starred Elliot Gould, Robert Duvall, Sally Kellerman, Donald Sutherland. Big hit movie. They made the TV show based on, I believe, the sequel to the book, which was MASH Goes to Maine. I think that's what it was called. So they recast a lot of the roles, all of the roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the third season, some of the cast left. So they had some cast shakeups. And then by season 5 and season 6, you got the really strong cast, because then you got Jamie Farr became a regular.
Yeah.
Loretta Swit was there for the entire thing. Mike Farrell as BJ Honeycutt. Mm-hmm. Great character. And my favorite, Harry Morgan.
From Dragnet.
From Dragnet, and one of my favorite movies, if you've never seen Inherit the Wind. Such a good movie. He's great in it. Everybody's great in it. It's about the Scopes Monkey trial.
And they
continued the show all the way to the end. The one character that is kind of missing is Radar O'Reilly.
Who I love Gary Berghoff on so many levels.
But he decided to leave. I want to say season 9, season 8.
He got his own show, I do believe. I think there was a very short-lived Radar spinoff. I'm just like spitballing this.
But the show was a huge hit. But right, kind of around season 3, when those characters left, that was
Larry Linville,
Wayne Rogers, McLean Stevenson.
Yeah.
Once they left, it went from being a comedy with dramatic elements to a drama with a comedic script.
Yeah, which is so weird that they were still having that laugh track in season 11.
Yeah,
it's like
there weren't a lot of instances of the laugh track in season 11, and even in this episode. It comes through, I'm going to say, like less than 5 times.
Oh, yeah. It's like there are multiple descriptions of how bones are either protruding or entering bodies in this episode. And it's like, you don't want to put laugh tracks in there.
If you get the DVD version, it gives you an option to have it with or without the laugh track.
Yeah. Well, and also just in general, people will often cite that as like the reason of like, I don't like laugh tracks, well, like that kind of stuff. And what my take on it is, like, the laugh track is not inherently bad. The laugh track works if it is actually a recording of human beings reacting to literally what you're seeing on screen, which in the case of like the Dick Van Dyke Show, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Seinfeld, you know, Frasier, that is what it is. Bewitched, that 70s show, MASH, like, I think that like we as humans can feel the artifice of someone is hitting play on a button. And so that is what gives the laugh track a bad name. But I don't know if I never hear people complaining about like the laugh track on Golden Girls. And it's like, no, because it's funny.
because it's played. It's obvious by the filming and the set that this is a sitcom, whereas MASH tries very hard, because they have exterior and interior sets, both filmed in California, that they had this element of realism that they were trying to bring to the whole show. And the laugh track is so alien to it, it just breaks the reality that they're trying to create. So by season 11, it's barely used, but it's unfortunately still there.
Yeah. But this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the MASH episode Trick or Treatment. It is the second episode of season 11, and it was written by Dennis Koenig and directed by Charles S. Dubin. Here's how Hulu describes the episode. During a Halloween celebration, scary stories are swapped, and then Father Mulcahy has a spooky experience with one of the incoming wounded. Ethan, how accurate is that description?
I'd say that spooky is not the accurate word there, but the rest of it is just, I don't know, it leaves a lot to be desired, because the spooky stories are, there are literally 2.5 of them.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is medical hijinks on Halloween and a lot of really wounded people.
Yeah, that's more. So I feel like I'm not watching MASH just because it's going to be an emotional commitment, probably on the level of a Cheers to me, because like just this episode, I respond very strongly to emotionally. I think that it is very, it's just really good performances, really like tight writing and sharp characters. And it is weird. Like, there isn't really a story being told in this episode. There's no format, no structure to it. It's just wild that this aired on CBS at like what, 9 p.m. Like, that's crazy to me.
This would be the equivalent of a medical drama today, where it's just instead of developing the people's plots, I've seen this a couple times where it's like, this is just the people coming in and they're being treated, and this is how they're being treated, and it's just a night in the ER as people are being pushed in. And that's exactly what this episode is,
except it's a half hour and like
comedy.
Yeah, and it's like an air quote comedy, which like the comedy comes, the comedy, so like the comedic scenes of this episode, which I guess we could talk about like chunks of it, like is the David Ogden Stiers, who is, oh my god, I don't know anyone's names because I've only seen a handful of MASH episodes.
Charles Winchester.
Yeah. So first of all, gotta shout out David Ogden Stiers for one, being Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast.
Number two, for being Martian Manhunter in the TV pilot for the Justice League.
Oh, hell yeah. And then, of course, for me, number three, being a member of the family, a homosexual. So I love you, David Ogden Stiers, hero. So he like plays like the uptight, like everyone is an idiot, I hate being here, you're all stupid guy. And he gets a lot of the funny lines. I really like when they're all just fully operating on a whole bunch of wounded soldiers, like at rapid pace, and they're trying to like, I don't know, distract themselves or just try to like focus and like just try to like get through it by telling weird ghost stories. He's the one that's just like, ugh, and is just a scullying all of them, which is, you know, a fun role for him.
If we can kind of like sum up this whole episode just like in a real quick, because we can talk about like I said, chunks of it. It's Halloween night. Honeycutt and Hawkeye are dressed up. Hot Lips and Harry Morgan's character, who I never
remember. Sherman?
Sherman Potter. They're all dressed up and they're ready to go out and have a good time. David Ogden Stiers is supposed to be covering. They're going to go hang out with the Marines who have just got in, who like to drink and party. That includes George Wendt. He's one of them. And also Andrew Dice Clay.
Andrew Clay.
But what ends up happening is they are pulled out of what they're doing because a whole bunch of wounded people are being brought in and just
mine went off and like, yeah. So
just waves of people are being brought in. So they were going to have fun. They're dressed up. Honeycutt's dressed as a clown. Hawkeye is dressed like Superman, just very homemade costumes.
Oh yeah. Cause they ain't got a Party City there in 1952.
So they are this is how it is. They're trying to deal with this mass of humanity that is bleeding and injured and needs surgery and needs repairs. There's a character who is brought in, who is dead, who they just leave. He's just left on the ground for a while.
Yeah. Because it's just like he has a toe tag on, and so yeah. They're just like, oh, yeah, just put him down. We got a dozen other people that like so, but he just ends up staying on the ground for the entire episode. At one point, like Hawkeye's like, can we at least get a sheet to cover this poor man?
And then the Marines, being the Marines in this, they are hard drinking, hard partying, fighting. One sticks his hand into a fan.
He George bets Wendt, someone that he can stick it in and stick it out before it gets cut.
Not George Wendt fits a whole pool ball in his mouth.
Can't get it out.
Andrew Dice Clay has a Jeep race with another GI backwards and backs into a chicken coop and he bangs his head. He's only in one scene. George Wendt, I think, is in two. But it's just this parade of tragedy cases until finally they get that dead guy up on a truck and Father Mulcahy gets there and he says, oh.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This man's Catholic. He hasn't gotten his last rites. He gets up on the truck with him and he sees that the man is crying and that he's not dead. He's just in a coma and they save his life like that. So it's a very special
episode. One shot. So like at the halfway point of the episode, when they put the sheet over him, we see his hand move a little bit, like his finger twitches. And so we as an audience know. And so then when Father Mulcahy jumps up there and gets out the holy water.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if that was just a vampire thing.
Holy water is like, the real thing, is Brad.
Okay. I'm Southern Baptist, which is just no rules, just wrong. starts like performing it, and then I don't know, the shot, and a lot of it goes William Christopher. A lot of it goes to his acting. I love William Christopher. It's mostly like his reaction to that tear is so beautiful and touching. And then at the very end, when they're all like gathered around and Harry Morgan's like, hey, welcome to the club. Like, you saved a life. And it's like, God, oh my heart.
And then Father Mulcahy takes it to the next level. And after Harry Morgan says, welcome to the club, you just saved a life. And he goes, no, I didn't. I was just talking to the one who did. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's good writing. Yeah, that's like, pretty good.
Oh, and so the other, so David Augustyers is the one that has the most funny. He's bringing the most funny to this because his reactions with George Wendt, like at the very beginning, when he goes in and he sees this asshole's got a pool ball in his mouth, he's mostly standing behind him. And so he's like asking him, like, can you cough? Can you say XYZ? I need to like look into your mouth. And it's like, oh, you got a pool. Like he's
He knew. Really. He knew going into it.
Yeah, said, he's just now, really getting
Marine got a pool ball stuck in his mouth. And David Ogden Steers is like, I'm going to fuck with him.
Yeah, it was just great. Then he's like, well, I can't take your temperature since you got that in there. Ben, like, really good, really good, really fun. George Wendt, who has been, like, Cheers also debuted at the start of season 11. So he's this is probably, like, week four of Cheers. And he's on here. The pool ball thing is terrifying.
Yeah.
How did they get it out? Like, thinking about, like, if that really happened to me, like, oh, God, I never would. But
because they it's kind of the same thing with a light bulb. You can stick a light bulb in your mouth. You cannot take a light bulb out of your mouth. Just the way that it's constructed.
Yeah. And so just like George went sitting there with like the number six ball, just like his mouth just fully open as wide as it can. Because it's like it's, you know, it's because like once it gets behind the teeth, like, oh, yeah. God. That's...
And David Ogden Stiers is treating him like a moron. Like, why would you do this on tonight, the worst night that we have? So he says, oh, the ball has a six on it. Is that your age?
Yeah. Like that. He's just so good. I love it. And then the same thing with like the guy who tried to punch a fan or whatever. And he says like, oh, it looks like we've actually discovered the lowest form of marine life. Or marine intelligence or something. Like, it's like very good.
It is well written, perhaps overwritten, but there are many good lines throughout.
He's a character. I can buy him. He's an overwritten kind of guy.
I think that everybody is overwritten, but I think that's why you watch it.
Oh, yeah. It's a very writerly show.
The same,
which like, I think is why I couldn't. It'll be an emotional investment for me if I watch.
It's like watching an Aaron Sorkin TV show. It's that level of, okay, real people don't talk like this, but I'm enjoying the fact that these people are.
So good listening to it. The scene that... So like lines that stick out to me, which is a fun way to put it, is like when Harry Morgan... gets I love if there are any like MASH super fans listening and they're just like the character's name is not Harry Morgan. Sherman Potter, Jesus. So like when like he like asks for an x-ray of a person that he's working on and they bring it back and it's just like, oh yeah, that's not his bone. That's someone else's bone that the mine like sent launched like a torpedo into him. And it's like, God. Which is actually for a Halloween episode, like there's a lot of body horror in this and we don't see any of it, but there's a lot of just descriptions of shit like that.
Yeah.
So spooky.
Yeah. Happy Halloween, 1982.
Yeah.
you're getting a lot of bloody smocks on this one.
What did you think of Andrew Dice Clay's performance? Do you want to explain who Andrew Dice Clay is? Because mercifully, he's not been relevant for at least 25 years or longer.
Yeah, Andrew Dice Clay was a comedian in the 80s and 90s. He did, as he called it, a very a character, which was racist, sexist, very sexist.
Yeah, that was
very R pushing X, very hard R rated stand-up act. Has played it a very broad stereotype character.
Is he from New Jersey? Because I mean, like the vibe, like I would equate him to, like, he's like if the situation was actually physically intimidating.
He got me wondering now. He was born in Brooklyn. He's from Brooklyn.
Okay, yeah, that makes that's still it's not the same, but it's
so there was a lot of controversy around him in the 80s and 90s. Him being so misogynistic and sexist and
was Sinead O'Connor the musical guest on an Andrew Dice Clay episode or something? But there was some, like, the two of them had a...
I remember it was on Saturday Night Live, and that might have been that episode. I know Nora Dunn refused to work with him on Saturday Night Live, and that's where he defended himself being like, I'm not this character, I'm just this character that I play. But no one really believes that.
But yeah, well, it's like when the character you're playing, like, his catchphrase was like, hickory dickory dock, I like punched woman I punched, like, it's like,
that was his thing, is that he did a lot of like, hey, nursery rhymes, and then yeah, ended with hey, which we will not repeat here.
God, yeah, if Fonzie was an asshole, like, that's
a great example.
He is the anti-Winkler, like,
yeah, he's like, yeah, if Winkler was in Star Trek and he had the beard.
Yeah, yeah.
He definitely didn't have the beard. He just wore like big sunglasses, and he's still around. Like, he's still performing to fairly limited audiences, I'm assuming. Now, that's me assuming. You might have a career renaissance.
Get the dice heads on here.
Yeah, he's done some movies. He's done some TV, but mostly he's known as a stand-up, very controversial stand-up.
And so this is like a solid, probably like 6 years before he really breaks out as like a stand-up, and like, because I feel like his heyday was late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. So this was just an actor. Mm-hmm. And he's only in one scene. He has blood coming out of his head, and Hawkeye looks at him and talks to him, and it's kind of like, you Marines are dumb for doing something like having a backwards Jeep race that you ran into a chicken coop. Come on inside and be dumb inside.
And so, like, that, there is a second beat to that, because when Potter is like out, like walking around outside, like checking on people, and MP, military police, comes up and they're like, hey, we're looking for this Marine. Make sure you keep him, like, he's arrested, like, because he ran over a whole bunch of, I'm assuming because he ran over a whole bunch of like Native people's chickens, which is like, that is income, and like, that's major property damage.
Yeah, that's the way they were looking at it.
And we get a great monologue, a little tiny monologue from Harry Morgan about like there's like the blood from dozens of different soldiers are in my boots right now. I don't have time to worry about this.
About your damn chickens, because he says, like, damn.
Yeah, and he's like, do you think I've been finger painting what's on my hands? Like, so good.
That's why it's more of a drama and less of a comedy.
Yeah. And you got to imagine, for the actors, a blast.
Yeah.
To, like, get those lines to say.
That's why it probably did so well, is you crammed, it's not just like we're cramming so many jokes in. You're cramming scenario after scenario. Dialogue, conversations, character development, history, stories, and jokes, and you're cramming it all into 22-23.
So, like, we haven't even mentioned the most, to me, the most affecting, again, I guess, like, there is a spirit of Halloween in this, and just how macabre, and the theme of storytelling is all throughout this.
Yeah.
And so one of the many people that shows up is a soldier who, you know, minds ain't good, so he be hurting. But they're also like, you are emaciated. Like, we need to get you like electrolytes. We need to get you. Yeah. We need to get you living again, basically. And he refuses everything. He doesn't want anything. Even like later when he's in a cot in the recovery tent. What is, I don't know. Hawkeye brings him a very nice looking piece of pumpkin pie. Like, it looks good. And he's like, it's rare that this food will actually help you and not kill you. So here you go. He just like throws it on the floor. And then we get a monologue. We get the camera zooms in on this actor. Who is the actor?
It's Richard Lineback.
What does he do?
He's done a lot of like one episodes of things. He's done like small parts in movies, but he's been working.
So he gets, the camera zooms in, and then he gives probably a two to three minute monologue just about what happened. The camera doesn't move. He's like, his eyes are telling a story of horror, like tears like welling up, like just a little bit as he recounts that they like, him and his buddies, like they had done a good job. Like, they had taken I'm not an army person.
They had turned back a Chinese force. They had really gotten them out of there, and they moved into a foxhole. He and his buddies moved into a foxhole, and they were eaten like kings because they were able to get a whole bunch of food.
Yeah, like their general or whatever was like, this was great. You know what? Early Thanksgiving. I'm going to get it. He got turkey, got stuffing.
He got everything. So they're eating in the foxhole. They're having a great time. And this guy is like, you know what? things are so good that I'm going to go and get seconds. So he gets up out of the foxhole. He gets back in line. They're slinging some more food on his plate and he hears an artillery barrage.
Yeah. He's like, it was just a minute. Like it was like just sudden and done. Like,
so he looks back at his buddies and they're all dead in the foxhole.
And he goes up to them and he says, like, they all looked so surprised.
And he's thinking that I shouldn't be alive. And the reason that I'm alive is because I was greedy I got too much food. So he says, I'm just not eating anymore.
And then like,
I'm supposed to be dead.
Hawkeye's basically like, I know someone you can talk to. Basically like a therapist. I'm like, like someone like you need to talk to this person, a therapist. And like the solution of it is like, there's nothing we can like, we just have to learn how to live with it. And
can't forget it.
Yeah. Like you can't forget it. We have to learn how to live with it. And that goes for me, like, or that goes for all of us or something like,
yeah.
And it basically the implication being like Hawkeye is also like me too, buddy. We're all in the same boat. You are not alone.
Cause we have to see, cause we know that Hawkeye has to see this stuff all the time.
Yeah. This is season 11 of this. Oh, I mean, also the Korean War did not last 11 years. How long last?
They it's funny.
3 years. 3 year war. Because,
out of the cast, Jamie Farr, Larry Gelbart, Alan Alda, and Mike Farrell were all in the army, and all of them missed out on Korea just barely. Like,
oh wow.
Larry Gelbart got out like 11 days before he was discharged 11 days before his unit was shipped to Korea.
Oh wait, so are all of them could have gone to, I'm trying to think of their ages. Like
Alan Alda did go to Korea, but like after the ceasefire, after the armistice, but he went there and I think he said in an interview he was just mess hall.
Wild.
But he was over there.
My grandfather was in Korea.
Megan's grandfather was in Korea. My grandfather was in both my grandfathers were in World War II.
Yeah, my
got out of the service.
My great uncle was in World War II and maybe at the beach at Normandy.
Ooh.
I don't know if it was the story that I've had in my head is that in probably like 2000 or like late 90s, we were at church, at my grandparents' church. It was probably Mother's Day or something. And my mom was sitting next to Uncle Buck, which was his name. And she noticed that he was like rubbing a stone that had like, he'd had it for so long. And it like, there was like a thumbprint in the stone from how long he had just like had. He's like, yeah, pick this up on the beach. And I keep, it's in his pocket. All the time. This is just like wild. And he was very big into history and family trees. And I know that I am a son of the American Revolution because of him.
Ooh, well now.
Yeah.
Gonna hit you up for some of that American Revolution money.
Yeah, I'm a SAR, son of American Revolution, whatever. Yeah, my family's been here since like the 1400s. We're having fun. 1500s.
Well, there were a couple people. Well, not only was everybody, a couple actors who worked on this in the army, but they did make a point to talk to veterans about their stories, and they incorporated a lot of the stories into episodes of MASH, which I read somewhere that like by the end, they were getting repeats of the stories because they had asked so many people that they were hearing the same stories over and again. They were like, can't do that one. We already did that.
Oh,
even
man.
If it was different places, different times, the stories were so similar that they had to turn stories down. Jamie Farr, actually, the dog tags that Jamie Farr wears were his actual army.
Oh, wow.
Dog tags.
Oh, so like, watching this episode and watching that monologue from the soldier about the early Thanksgiving disaster, like it just really dawned on me how wild that, like, this is not like a well-renowned episode. Like, I think this is just like a random, this is the last season episode of MASH, you know, like we're season 11, not much left in the tank. And this is still what they turn out and put on the air at 9 PM on CBS on a Monday night. And there is it just like hit me. Like TV is not this anymore. Like over air broadcast TV is just flat out not this. Like, especially right now because of the writer's strike finally has ended. They got what they needed, deserved. And same for actors need that. So actors are still striking. They deserve whatever the hell they are asking for, especially if it pertains to not letting robots take all of our jobs. So like TV right now is especially like hella dire. Like the wild game shows, it just stuff that they're putting out right now is very weird. But even if the actors and writers hadn't been striking, the kind of stuff that we get on network television, just like this would never fly. It's just wild.
It's too good. This is premium TV. It would last 50 minutes and it would be on HBO.
And it would probably get 2 to 3 seasons.
And each, it would be an episode. It would be an 8 episode season.
And yeah, and that we broke television.
Instead, we have
has 256 episodes.
Exactly. One last thing, because I know we're kind of like we're winding down. I want to talk about one of the ghost stories.
Oh yeah, because there are those little ghost stories, and
it's kind of like it's along the lines of like after the car crash, they took a picture, and then in the picture was my uncle. But there was one that Hawkeye tells that there was a guy. His uncle was on a boat. The compass had broken. The radio had broken. He was stranded at sea, and along comes this old ship, the Luck of the Irish. And it's just barreling through, and his uncle follows that ship all the way to the coast. And then the Luck of the Irish turns around and goes back out to sea. And when his uncle gets off the boat, he's telling everybody about this ship, the Luck of the Irish. And everyone's like, guy, the Luck of the Irish crashed 20 years ago. Everybody died. That happened to my father.
Wait, what?
So when I was in college, I was in Alfred, New York, which is in a blast radius of all the snow that comes off of Lake Erie in western New York. And my dad came up, I think, to pick me up for Thanksgiving or maybe just come by. But it started snowing and it snowed bad. It was low visibility. And I've been in New York when it's done that. And my dad's scared. It's night. The snow is falling. It's deep. He's driving on the highway. There is no one around him. And he's listening to the radio and he's just switching the channels, trying to get his mind off it. And there's nothing's coming through. And then all of a sudden, clear as a bell, is old music. The kind of stuff that his parents used to listen to, like Perry Como and Rosemary Clooney and Frank Sinatra. And it's coming through totally clear. And as he hears that, a snowplow comes in front of him. And he follows that snowplow all the way to Alfred. And by the time he gets to Alfred, the music stops. And so we still think that it's his parents got him to that snowplow and saw him through until he got in safely.
Because what? They couldn't find that radio station again?
We couldn't find that. I couldn't find that radio station again.
Ugh.
Yeah. Just like, yeah.
My mom thinks she saw a demon in her bedroom.
Jesus Christ.
Which, I mean, you know, is just stuff that my mom just says without. I think she finally, because I know she never liked The Exorcist and never wanted to, like, I saw that, you can't watch that, etc. And it wasn't until like within the past 20 years, like after I became like 18, like an adult or whatever, she was like, oh yeah, because when I was like 16, I saw a demon in my bedroom. Just like standing in the corner, which is like, well, maybe sleep paralysis demon or like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But also just like the fact that just the offhand, and my mom never talks about this stuff, is not a supernatural, like just like had like none of this is a part of her outward belief system as far as I know. And so out of nowhere, she's like, no, yeah, I saw a demon.
Spiritualists don't believe in demons, but I personally do, just because I don't believe that human beings are the top of like the evolutionary food chain. There's got to be something that's extra dimensional to it.
That's terrifying. That's just Cthulhu shit.
Well, do we have some must have facts?
Oh my God. No, you don't want to learn more about demons.
I'm terrified of ghosts and demons.
Let's get out the Ouija. Let's see who we can talk to. William Frawley, come through. No. I would love to talk to William Frawley via Ouija. So 19.9 million people watched this episode of television and probably never look at pumpkin pie the same way again. It was number 4 for the week. The top six shows of the week were Newhart at number 6. And that episode, BT Dubs, is the debut of Larry, Daryl, and Daryl. Because it's episode 2 and it's a spooky episode where they find a body buried in the basement, and who do you hire to come dig up a body in the basement? Larry, his brother Daryl, his other brother Daryl. So that's the number 6. 5 was Dynasty, 4 was MASH, 3 was Dallas, 2 was TV's Censored Bloopers, and number 1 was 60 Minutes. Now, kids, gather round, and let's talk about why something called TV's Censored Bloopers is ranked so high. And let me tell you, also in the top 10 was something about old commercials. And that is because before YouTube, networks would just make giant compilations of this stuff and then would just air them, and let my parents would be like, there's a commercial. Go, we gotta watch this. Like, that's
bloopers were the same thing back in the 1950s and 60s. Kermit Schaefer had a TV show where he showed bloopers. Mm-hmm. He showed, you know, people tripping over things on sets, or, you know, a radio announcer saying like, and here's the Beatles with "I Want to Hold Your Hams" or like something
Whoa,
bloopers. I have a book somewhere that my grandparents had called Prize Bloopers by Kermit Schaefer, which I got after they both died.
But I love that was like a major, major thing.
Yeah.
From like the 50s to the 90s was like, oh, they're rerunning old commercials. Yes. Like,
and now like, YouTube's get just to see Willard Scott like trip over a cord. Oh my God.
So yeah, number 2 for the week ahead of MASH and Dallas. Like, that's wild. So the CBS Monday night lineup was all killer, no filler, I think. Well, it started with Square Pegs, which was the Sarah Jessica Parker high school show, which has a Halloween episode that aired this night. That is good. Private Benjamin, the TV version, followed by MASH, then Newhart, and then Cagney and Lacey. So, like,
that's pretty
solid
good.
Night. Solid night of television. Yeah. Now, what are you watching? on ABC, they are playing the 1980 movie Brubaker. Robert Redford, Yaphet Kotto, reform-minded warden, uncovers widespread corruption when he enters his newly assigned prison posing as an inmate.
Nah.
On CBS, we have MASH, the 4,077. Okay, Jesus. Oh, boy, man. I'm not a MASH head. I'm not a MASHer. That means something completely different in the 1950s. Plans for a Halloween night costume party are interrupted by incoming wounded from the front and from Rosie's bar. And then on NBC, we've got a movie premiere, Born Beautiful, starring Erin Gray and Laurie Singer. A top fashion model tries to make a career change and help a troubled high school student make it in the highly competitive world of New York modeling. I tell you what, if it wasn't Halloween, I'd be watching Born Beautiful, baby.
But I'd be watching MASH.
Yeah, I would be watching MASH, especially a Halloween MASH.
Because MASH is tried and true. It's the 11th season. and versus a Robert Redford movie that's cut up with commercials.
Yeah. Born
Beautiful, a premiere of a movie I've never seen, also cut up with commercials. I'm watching that.
This high school student is going to trying to make it in the competitive world of New York modeling. And hopefully she never runs into a columnist like Bob Green or whatever.
Yeah, they made a movie of that. It's called Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. And it was really good.
On IMDb, 486 people gave this a 7.6 out of 10. Higher, lower? I'd go higher.
I'd go probably 8.2.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I do. I think I have given this a 5-star Halloween episode rating, which is probably uncharacteristic for me because I'm usually a very big stickler for like sticking to the themes of the holiday it's associated with. And pretty much like you take the costumes out of this, it's not Halloween. Right. Except that I do think that it really, really taps into the old tradition of like ghost stories or just storytelling.
Yeah.
And a lot of the storytelling is really affecting and just sweet old William Christopher raising someone from the dead. I think he is so cute. I will say I've gotten the entire episode about talking about how MASH, just like top to bottom, has maybe like the hottest cast in all TV history. Like,
oh my God.
Alan Alda, David Ogden Stiers could get it to me. Larry Linville back in the day, little Gary Berghoff, William Christopher. I'm naming all the like weird ones.
I want to read you a little bit of something that the featured review. Oh wait, no, where is it? Oh no, this wasn't the one. I read a review of it and I was like, what? Okay. So there was an error written in the IMDb page. And someone is calling this out. I'm M. Johnson something. And this is on IMDb. And let me read you the whole error that he points out, and then the stinger at the end of his error pointing out that did not need to be there. The goofs contain an error. Charles was calling George Went Private Moscone as a reference to billiards great Willie Moscone. Mr. Moscone was the technical advisor for The Hustler and appeared in several scenes during the movie as Willie, an uncredited role. Some, like me, remember the much-hyped Wide World of Sports episode featuring Moscone versus Minnesota Fats. Too bad the goof's author missed the connection. Hence, it was a pretty good joke rather than a goof. As far as the show, the series was winding down, and it was fun to see up-and-comers, the Dice Man, and Mr. Went. Also, and I hope this is not taken wrongly, but Margaret never looked better in her costume of choice for the planned party.
Of course, I mean, man.
I would like to point out that there is a factual error in this. Also, I would like to have sex with this woman.
And the Dice Man. Ooh, bow before thee, like...
Yes, so...
God, we know exactly who that guy is. Imagine, like, you're like, what did you do last night? Oh, I went on IMDb and I looked for factual errors in the goofs section of classic sitcoms.
Oh, now
goofs
Brett...
Goofs,
now
if I might
gonna
be...
Now like our show. He's not going to leave us a good review.
I would love to see the review he would leave. Anyway, God, who had the must-see performance in this episode?
Not the Dice Man.
Sorry, Dice.
I would probably say Mike Farrell as BJ Honeycutt, because he did the entire thing dressed as a clown. And then at one point, he did the Harpo Marx thing where someone was standing there and he lifted up his leg and he dropped it in the person's hand.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of like no choice but to hold it. I thought that was funny. How about you?
It feels wild to give it to William Christopher because I think he's in the episode for maybe 45 seconds. But he's just like, it does suck that he isn't in this episode more because he's just such like an earnest little ball of little ray of sunshine. And then he's in a Murder, She Wrote episode where he's the killer. Spoiler.
Oh, fun, stupid fact. Loretta Swit, who plays Hot Lips Houlihan, One of her few animated credits, she was in the Batman animated series episode Mad as a Hatter, the first appearance of my favorite character, the Jervis Tetch, the Mad Hatter. I own two animation cells from that particular episode.
Find that episode on IMDb and make sure the children know. And must other people see this episode specifically at Halloween?
Yes. Yeah. This is just a great episode. It's not going to have you rolling on the ground, but it's going to have you really paying attention because the dialogue comes fast and furious and it's really good.
Yeah, and I think that it just sucks you in. I mean, this episode sucked me in good. That did not go where I thought it would. But no, like it's just really engrossing. And I think like when I do a sitcom binge, like you kind of need like, you know, you want to pay attention. In some episodes, you want to like lay back, play on your phone, etc. While you know your middle episodes of the season, like MASH seems like the kind of show that's like, no, I if I'm gonna watch MASH, I have to watch MASH because like an episode like this, which I feel like is probably just a, you know, one in the 256, and it's just so well done and engrossing. This really is emotionally affecting.
This was hard for me to take notes on because everything was happening so fast that I had to keep pausing it so I could, my handwriting wouldn't keep up with the episode because they'd be on to the next thing, on to the next scene. Someone's talking about a completely different story and I had to pause it probably more than I would have liked to.
It's really like you got to just let it wash over you in a way because at least this episode, there isn't a story to follow. You are mostly just like following the emotional truth of the characters and like the emotional journey that they are like just going on for this 20 minutes. Like, very good.
Yeah.
Boo! Don't eat candy that's already been opened. So where can people find you on the Instagram?
I am now on Blue Sky, and I am making it a point to post every day.
Good.
I have three followers.
We all gotta, you know, you gotta try, damn it. Like,
yeah. Follow me on Blue Sky, and I'm on Instagram at EthanK55. Thank you for everyone who already has.
Yes.
How about you, Brett? Where are you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Brett White and on Twitter and Blue Sky at Brett White. And please go to the YouTube where, you know, we got new stuff hopefully still rolling out day by day, etc. And like, subscribe, etc., 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 etc. Please.
Thank you to Acast for hosting us.
Whoa. And Jesus, is that everything?
We only have one more Halloween episode, and that's the 90s.
The 90s. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's into Thanksgiving. Weirdly enough, I do think Thanksgiving is by far my third favorite of the three holidays. Like, I don't like, who cares? It's fine. It yields some of the greatest sitcom episodes.
Yeah.
So it's, the holiday has that going for it. Anyway, thanks everybody. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.